This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. You can find out more at the website allbook-books.com. Today, riffing and musing on the topic of art, and looking at some wordage about that. And obviously the emphasis is on the literary angle, but you can think of it as applying to whatever art you may do or be thinking about. Artificial. So one of the definitions of art is skill acquired by experience, study, or observation. So in part, that's true, acquired by experience or study, but yet little kids are natural born artists with seemingly little experience or no study. Another one is a conscious use of skill and creative imagination, especially in the production of aesthetic objects. So I looked up aesthetic, which is beautiful, attractive, quality of perception or the feel. So we have a sort of can be a little snooty, the aesthetics. But yet what is beautiful or attractive is when beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So is art about a bulldog aesthetic? Is a rock aesthetic, is that beautiful? And then we get to the phrases like the art of life. Art of life, that's a cool thing. It's like, what's more important, the art of life or being a good artist? Or maybe you can do both combined. And then there's a sort of turning the corner into the artifice and the artificial. I thought of the Donald Trump's book, The Art of the Deal. And how is that art? Many would beg to differ. So that gets into artifice, the clever use of tricks to cheat somebody. And that gets me thinking about art that is cheap and imitation and the quality. We have this view of art as kind of up on a pedestal. And sometimes it is, if it's just exquisite. But a lot of times it becomes a commodified product. And in a sense, copied or artificed. And then from artifice, it's not far to get to probably one of the most dominant words. We don't think about it much in the society today in the world. Artificial. Made or produced to copy something natural, not real. Artificial became so dominant that now it's a big deal. It's a big deal to have on products natural. And even the word natural on products is artificial. Because it doesn't always mean, what does it mean? You could put sawdust in a granola bar and it'll say natural flavorings because it's from wood, it's natural, and it's sawdust. So natural is become artificial in today's commodified and mind-tripping world. But the artificial is certainly a question in people's minds when they do anything, when they buy something, is this real? Is this real? But in an artistic sense, I think there's a certain striving for a certain level of maybe originality or purity. These are tricky words to define because in a sense, nothing, what's original when things are nothing new under the sun kind of thing. And then what's pure? Is pure in the eye of the beholder? One of my favorite examples of art is when I visited the Pueblos in New Mexico back in the early mid-90s. And at first I went to some of the galleries and I saw, I think at that time it was kind of labeled Southwestern pottery. And it's been beautiful, beautiful pottery with, ancient native traditions and symbols and smooth and different processes for the way they're fired. Very much a part of the culture and beautiful artworks that people would want to put on their mantles and pay hundreds of dollars, if not more, for. But then I was fortunate enough to visit one of the pueblos. I think it was the Jemez Pueblo. And then the families let me in because I was actually on a shopping tour getting some pottery to bring back to the East Coast for a gift shop. And inside one of the homes, I can still see it today on top of, like, on top of the kitchen cabinets were pots, similar to the ones in the gallery, but maybe not quite as polished, a little more earthen-looking, earthenware, maybe that's the word. And in those pots were stuff like beans, dried beans, rice, grains, whatever. And that has just stayed with me all these years because I thought that is the true Southwestern art. That is the art that is practical and part of the everyday. And no offense to, you know, wonderful, beautiful pottery as a as an artist, and, you know, maybe he or she makes his living or helps feed his family with selling the nice pottery. But in the artistic sense, in the big picture, I thought, wow, that's the art as practical everyday life. It's nothing fancy, it's nothing to be famous about, it's nothing that's trying to entertain. It has a practical value and a practical use. So I find that fascinating, and that's kind of one of my guides as a artist with accentuating writing, is that I find I kind of have two basic modes, not to label myself, but I generally think of art and writing as wanting it to reflect and be something practical and everyday. So, you know, I write a poem, and then, you know, some guy's having his coffee and his bagel in the morning, and then he reads the poem. It's just sort of part of the everyday flow. It doesn't have to be, you know, put up on a pedestal kind of thing. It's just part of the everyday natural conversation, talking about what's going on in the world, observations, experiences I've had, anything along those lines that's practical and day-to-day. And then it doesn't mean it excludes that, but the other is, say, when writing a book, I think of the eternal and the posterity of it and the legacy of it, that this is something deep that I want, hopefully, somebody, you know, now or however many years in the future, to read that and just have it be eye-opening or heart-opening or shift their consciousness or really affect their life in a positive way, because that's how I find, that's somehow my experience with books is like, wow, that just changed my perspective. So that's that piece of art as a book that is timeless and eternal. So there's two kind of modes there. And then I had read of I forget which native nation, but a tradition in the pottery of using a piece of the pot from the previous, I forget the details, but like from the previous pot or the previous generation, in effect, going back to the original pot made, that a piece of the clay from every pot was in every future pot. It's just like a wonderful tradition of recognizing the connection of the ancestry and the lineage and the first pot being in this pot, which is what we are made of, what we're like with our DNA and all. And take that to the level of the artist, where artists are, you know, certain things that have been done, it becomes a label. Certain, you know, poetry, the romantics, the beat poets, whatever. And so every generation then has that as part of, you know, their art to then either include or to riff off of or to go to another level. And I was actually quite excited when I learned about that pottery tradition, because I had something I've done, like if I'm painting a room and I will leave a little section unpainted because I want to remember what it looked like. And I have a hat that I the hats that I buy for the summer, which have a band around, the colored band around them, and every time I get a new hat, I cut off a tiny piece of the band and I put it on the band so that, you know, right now I think there was one band and two or two other little pieces of bands on there. So that is another flavor of the artwork, is not only the present moment and the practicality and the sort of eternal sense of the future, but also the connection with the past and how that informs the present and the future. And another example along those lines is the Greek, the word theatron, where theater, the word theater comes from, means the teaching place. And here's a quote from Stella Adler: the seeing place, the place people come to see the truth about life and the social situation. So that's yet another function of art that ties into both the everyday and the ongoing stories, the stories that don't change. Why do people watch a Shakespeare play now, even though it was written 400 something years ago? Is because the archetypes and the personalities and the behavior patterns are, in a sense, eternal, or reflect certain ways of being that have not gone out of style. Someone who's, you know, corrupt or egotistical or this or that. So we learn from that. So that's another angle of art, is something to learn from. There's many, many ways one can go with that. Speaking of Shakespeare, he has that famous quote about the artist holding a mirror up to nature. So that's a whole loaded topic there. Like, what is nature? And are we just, you know, am I speaking for the trees? Am I speaking for the earth? Am I speaking for the habitat? The birds? Is my writing just reflecting that? Or am I adding something new? Or am I guided by that to what to write? So that's also a part of my writing style, is I feel like that's one of the reasons I'm very much into the haiku, because it accentuates the natural world, and I feel like that's something that people need to remember, even if it's just a little haiku that reminds them, oh yeah, there's a tree out there, or there's a bird out there. So that is one of my ways of holding a mirror up to nature. And then, maybe leaning towards the artifice or the artificial, there's art as an escape, but not always negatively. Someone recently, a friend, read my recent book and said it was an escape for her. And at first, I kind of took that a little negatively, but then she explained that it was an escape from her day-to-day, typically what she's thinking about. So then I took it as a compliment that I helped provide a different way of thinking and a different way of seeing the world for her, that it was different from what she's used to. So again, I think that's what art does, is it provides another, it's like putting on some different kind of glasses and looking at the world and looking at life through a different angle or a perspective. Because, you know, we each have our perspective, and why do we talk to people and why do we watch things and read things, is to see things from different angles. And then recently I had heard that in the Lakota language, I think there's no word for art. No word for art. And that to me makes me think of the Pueblo pottery again. I mean, is that art? If someone is making a pot to put their beans in, is that art? Well, then it seems like that's not really, quote, art. It's just part of daily life. So I think that's important to remember for artists. I mean, artists have a sort of cause or this thing that guides them and keeps them, and there is a different way of thinking and relating with the world that artists tend to have. But I think a lot of artists can fall into troubles and sort of wallow in their sense of being on the fringe of society and nobody understands them. I think that they almost they can become a victim of one's own art if the art is so aesthetic and so accentuated as some ideal to put up on a pedestal in a gallery, or to be the bestseller, or, you know, to get the prize winning label on your book and all kinds of stuff. I think that can lead to so much of what we hear in artists about, you know, depression and issues like that. And on a societal level, the artificial and the artifice goes back perhaps to Roman times with bread and circus, where it was used as a distraction to keep the people distracted from what was actually going on, which in the modern sense has not let up. If you consider TV, and media and celebrities. It's what I would call with the Yiddish word schlock, like schlock theater. It's shoddy, it's poorly done, it's cheap, and it's fake, and it's imitation, and it's very much a distraction from all of the other stuff, the finding about out about social situations and the art of life and things like that. In my experience, even sometimes artists perpetuate the snootiness. I mean, I've heard poets think that, you know, poetry is meant to be this sort of ideal and timeless. And that's, I think, a half-truth, because they could look down on something that is topical or so-called political, because that's not, quote, poetry. But I would beg to differ. And then it comes back again to that one of the first definitions of art as something to develop and cultivate, acquired by experience, study, or observation. I would say there's not a definitive answer. It's a skill, and it's not a skill. As little children show with art, and some of the haiku that I wrote 20-something years ago are as good as anything I will ever write. So, like, what's happened? Have I not improved? Or I think I've gotten more consistent. Or I'm better able to do it in a consistent way, but how much have I improved? I don't know. So I think it's good to honor both the skill of something, and there definitely is craft that one can learn for, obviously, depending on the art. It's hard to just write a symphony. It's hard to build a table without some craft. It's hard to write a novel or a nonfiction book without some kind of study and craft. So yes, there is a skill, and then some art, you don't have to rely on the skill so much. One of the poems I wrote years ago was just walking through the park, and I just kind of got in the zone, and it's a rare experience. The poem basically wrote itself in like 45 minutes. It just was like a non-stop flow of communication. So is that my skill? I don't know. Maybe all the work I do that got me ready to be in the mode for that. I don't know. I don't have that answer. So again, it's the everyday and the eternal in simplified words. Up on my wall is the Chinese pictures for the word poetry, which translates to, it's basically word plus temple. So there's a sacredness to the poetry. So I hold that even though I may be writing about everyday stuff and casual stuff, ultimately, to me, that's sort of like the lodestar of the poetry, that it's a sacred art, and I am sort of charged with this duty to represent that and do what can be the most of whatever that is. And part of that, again, but that's not necessarily putting it on the pedestal, because part of that definition in the Chinese pictograph has to do with it's like a plant or a grass growing from the earth. It's part of what the picture for temple is. So there's that natural connection. There's the world of nature from where we often do get our art. People, painters are outside painting landscapes and this and that. And there's a certain flow. I think of a lot of art as a river. And, you know, when you're lucky to catch the fish, that's your piece of art. So there's both that high, holy kind of temple thing, but that's also very much down to earth. And it's as above, so below, as a way to round up and round out this little talk about art, artifice, and artificial. And my question to listeners and writers, artists that are listening would be to, what is your place? How do you see and how do you live your place as an artist? And does that get in the way of your life? And if so, is there a way to make, you know, your life, your living, your full living experience flow, have a good flow with your art, so that they intertwine and so that one doesn't override the other to the point of getting lost in the sauce of wallowing in one's art, or whether one is being heard or not heard, or whether one is successful or not successful, whether anybody understands you or doesn't understand you. Whether your art is great, but your life's a mess, or your life is great, but your art's a mess. I mean, these are questions I think every artist grapples with, and I have asked myself umpteen times, you know, how do I place this? How does this fit with? To me, the art of life comes first, and the art is second. And I think that's sometimes where, so I think sometimes artists look to the art to save their life in a way, which may have its place, but I think that puts a lot of pressure on the art and a lot of pressure on one's life. So I've heard Ray Bradbury say, if you're not enjoying writing, you'd be better off out picking peaches. And I agree with that, because that helped me to enjoy the process of writing. Because if I'm not enjoying it, then why am I doing it? And I'd be better off, out there picking peaches. I actually love peaches. So if I had an opportunity to pick peaches, I would probably write about it. All right, thanks for listening, and be well, and have a good one.